Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. Welcome. It's Progressive News Network once again. I'm your host, Richard Spezak, bringing you the facts. Direct from the voice of progressive activism, their work every day to make this a better world. We've got amazing guests tonight. Jamie Robinson, Earth Rider, who is traveling with you. We also have Chris Costello, Eric Culp, and also we've got this amazing and very hard here on the East Coast. There's so many challenges going on in our state. There's enough for an army to evacuate. Luckily, that's why you're here. Florida's water, Florida's land, Florida's air, undeveloped land, wildlife. There are so many challenges. Thank goodness you showed up. Duty things. But you know, there has been such high-handed behavior from the Florida legislature pulling things out of the hat last minute, no debate, refusing to debate, and pulling out their favorite lobbyist project, which is has gotten rolling. Government in the sunshine. Obviously, it's something that has passed away. Here's a little story from Trish Ponder. Florida Republican legislators give themselves an absolute shield. Courts, the public, apparently have no right to make them speak. If you've noticed an avalanche of lawsuits over your decisions, would you A, take a moment to consider objectively what you've been doing and adjust your actions, or B, pass legislation that says you can no longer be sued? Well, if you are a Florida legislator, you've picked option B in a heartbeat. And so, Florida's supermajority Republican legislature, facing court challenge after court challenge to ALEC written laws, is now shielding its members from giving testimony or depositions and freeing them from any necessity to explain their intentions, as if they weren't transparent. Republicans on the panel said that the move was necessary because more and more groups, teachers, union, and, you know, citizens, are filing lawsuits against the legislature and attempting to compel lawmakers and their staff to testify about legislative intent behind what they've passed, you know, besides feathering their own beds. Current Florida law allows a limited privilege that protects lawmakers, but it's subject to a case-by-case determination by a judge about whether it should be applied. 2 weeks ago, four legislators and two staff members persuaded a U.S. district judge in Tallahassee to quash subpoenas by the U.S. Justice Department seeking to ask about the legislative intent of controversial voting reforms passed in 2011. Oh, you remember where even the public noticed that the voting system in Florida was absolutely undemocratic. Now, of course, it worked for the fat cats, it worked for the corporatists, but, you know, it just didn't work for the people. You remember the people. The bill, which fittingly was introduced anonymously, comes just as the Republican House and Senate are unveiling their new district maps, redrawing the lines as required after the 2010 census. Spoiler alert, the new maps continue to ensure Republican victories in almost all districts, despite the fact that there are more registered Democrats in Florida than there are Republicans. Oh my God! Florida Democratic Party Chair Rod Smith explained, Republicans are acting in defiance of recently passed state constitutional amendments protecting the redistricting process. Voters in 2010, I'm sure you remember this, overwhelmingly approved fair district amendments with 63% of the vote in a clear demand for a different process. But it looks, ladies and gentlemen, like we've got our first guest. Let me bring her on. I think this is Jamie Robinson. Jamie, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Well, welcome. Welcome to Progressive News Network.
Thanks. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Surf Riders?
Okay. Well, I'm a Florida native, born and raised in West Palm Beach, Florida. I'm the web chair as well as the Rise Above Plastics chair for Surf Rider for Palm Beach chapter, County Chapter. And basically, Surf Rider is just out to, we're activists out trying to protect our playground, as we call it. You know, it might be contrary to their name, but we're not all surfers. It just kind of started with surfers who decided that they didn't want anyone trashing the beaches and the coastlines anymore. So they're really out to protect the coastal environments as well as protect and preserve our beaches that we, you know, we play on.
So tell me, Jamie, one of the questions I ask all my activists is, you know, it's so easy to be lulled into what I call simplistic consumerism. What was it that activated you? What made you get up off the sofa and decide you wanted to do something?
You know, what's funny is that I personally have always been very interested in environmental activities and in the environment in general. And I'm a graphic designer myself, or web designer. So I went to school for kind of the wrong thing. So when I got out and realized that, you know, I decided to go with something I was very passionate about. And right around the time where I was trying to figure out kind of which road to take with that aspect, my little sister got me involved with Surf Rider, and I went to the first meeting. And when I was there, they were kind of in this transition period talking about, you know, big things that were going to be happening within the chapter. And when I just heard everyone else and how they had the same sort of passion that I was already trying to channel into my career, it just clicked. It was like, wow, you know, I should be here. It's something that I really need to do.
Well, good, good. So tell me, what's on first base with the Surf Riders right now?
Right now, actually, we just got back from a spring jam. That's kind of funny. We were at the spring jam with Surfers for Autism, along with the Loggerhead Marine Life Center. It was basically an all-day music festival. We were there, you know, handing out information on some of our programs, like Rise Above Plastics and Ocean Friendly Gardens, and accepting memberships, you know, just getting the word out, kind of raising awareness. And the next step for us is actually a beach cleanup this month. We're having a beach cleanup on the 24th down in Delray.
Excellent, excellent. Tell me, were you with Surf Riders during the Maconda
the
blowout last summer?
The Honda? No, I wasn't actually.
I was just curious. This may be a little out of your element, and if it is, that's okay. Let me know. Did you hear about the sudden BP settlement?
Yes, I might have followed that. Yeah, not through Surf Rider, but I was following that story. I did hear about that.
Isn't that interesting? Just before it came to trial, it seems that they wanted to keep their dirty linen as low-key as possible, huh?
Right, yeah, exactly. I remember reading that story in the newspaper, and it was thinking the same exact thing. It was like, oh, all of a sudden, you guys have something to hide.
Well, you know, I just heard a story on another NPR affiliate where they were talking about the fact that the Corps of Engineers is being sued because of their lapses in the levee system in New Orleans. And they are paying, meaning the U.S. taxpayer, is paying $20 billion for that mischance. And you look at how little BP is coughing up, it just seems that this is completely untoward. Obviously, the Surfriders is involved in so many things. As I understand, you have a wildlife component, you have a water quality component. If people are interested in becoming involved in Surfrider, involved in ocean life and ocean water quality, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, Surfrider National, I know that you can go to their website, and they have a ton of information on their website, especially about all the different chapters in the nation. But for a Surfrider Palm Beach County chapter, you can get in contact with quite a few different people. If you go to our website, it's surfriderpvc.org, and we have all of our information up there, as well as an email if you don't feel comfortable calling in or anything like that. Myself, you can contact me. Do you want my email? I can give you my email now.
Sure.
It's jahamilton@surfriderpvc.org. You can contact me with any questions, really, you have, especially if you have anything about, you know, comments or questions on the website or the Rise Above Plastics program. You can come to me with any questions or concerns or ideas as well. I'm always open for ideas for people on as far as campaigns that we can run or programs we can start for awareness and raising awareness and, you know, among the community.
Well, I always want to make sure that our audience has ample opportunity to participate. So why don't you give us your email address again, just a little slower.
Okay. It's jahamilton, @surfriderpbc.org.
Okay. Well, that's great. Listen, I want you to stay in touch, and when you guys have something else going on, please give us a holler, okay?
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Okay, you take care, and our regards to all our good friends at Surf Rider.
Thanks so much. You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to play you the interview with Chris Costello of the Sierra Club. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Chris Costello, Regional Organizing Representative of the Sierra Club of the state of Florida. Chris, welcome.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to let you get right to it. We've got the legislature in session, 2012. What's the worst damage they're up to right now?
Well, that's a tough one. I think what I can do is talk about what I've been intimately involved with, and it's an old story that is new every legislative session, pretty much.
Fair enough.
The big deal this year has been a big deal for the last six legislative sessions. This is the sixth legislative session where the legislature, with support from the big out-of-state fertilizer companies, specifically Scott's Miracle-Gro, the Turf Builder people, and True Green, Chemlon, have wanted to get rid of local regulation of urban fertilizer. That's the fertilizer that people put on their lawns to make their St. Augustine grass greener. States around the country are battling nutrient pollution. Florida is no different. In fact, I think Florida's problem is probably the worst. Our water bodies here are choked with the nitrogen and phosphorus that comes from a lot of different sources, certainly urban fertilizer, but also sewage spills, less than adequately treated sewage, wastewater, animal manure, etc. Florida's dependence on water quality for its tourism industry makes it especially hard hit when it comes to how water quality affects our economic engine. And we're also harder hit by urban turf fertilizer than any other state because folks have a tendency to put it on year-round here as opposed to up north. So urban fertilizer regulation has become very big in the state of Florida since about 2005 when the red tide and the big green monsters hit the state so very hard after a series of hurricanes. It's the only way, urban fertilizer management is really the only cheap method of reducing the nitrogen and phosphorus pollution that makes its way into our waterways. There are a lot of expensive methods, mostly wastewater treatment upgrades, stormwater infrastructure projects. But urban fertilizer management is cheap. In fact, it's almost free. for a community and for taxpayers. So local communities, starting on the Southwest Gulf Coast, started passing these ordinances to regulate urban fertilizer back in 2006 and 7. And since that time, there are a lot of them around the state. There are 52 municipal ordinances that regulate turf fertilizer, and there are 16 county ordinances in the state. It just makes sense. It's not a partisan issue. It's just purely common sense. These ordinances restrict the type of fertilizer, slow release as opposed to quick release, and they restrict the timing of fertilizer application. Another no-brainer, you don't want to put fertilizer down on your lawn right before one of our torrential summer downpours. Doesn't make any sense. It goes straight to the waterway. So makes sense. It's nonpartisan. We've never had one resident stand up against these ordinances in any of those county or municipal level hearings to adopt these ordinances, but there are some big opponents of local fertilizer regulation. And as I said before, Scott's Miracle-Gro and True Green Come On are two of the biggest. There are others, but those are the biggest. And, of course, they use the old business model of the more fertilizer they sell, the better for them. Unfortunately, it's not good for Florida. And so since these ordinances started being passed a good 5 years ago, these industries, the pest control and the fertilizer industries, have fought to get rid of these local ordinances. Every year for 5 years, we've fought back these preemption attempts, mostly because a really great coalition of partners came together to fight back. It's not just the environmentalists, but as I said, it's a nonpartisan issue. So you have people on both sides of the aisle. You have counties and cities themselves and the Association of Counties, the League of Cities here in Florida, and the Florida Stormwater Association. We've all come together to fight back. This year, it's been no different, and we are in the thick of it right now. This legislative session, the first attempt was to get bills through the House and the Senate that would exempt all commercial applicators of fertilizer from abiding by any of the provisions of these local ordinances. They trimmed those bills down to exempt the commercial fertilizer applicators only from the rainy season application ban. But we fought those back and we won. Both of those bills were killed in each House because we got to enough legislators and educated them enough on how the rainy season ban really is the backbone of wise fertilizer management. But sometimes you just have to continue to stay in the ring. We have had a couple of sneak attacks, or stealth attacks as we like to call them, in the past couple of days. Although the bills were killed and were dead for this session, a couple of different legislators, Representative Albritton from Hardy County in the House and Senator Jim Norman from Hillsborough County in the Senate, have in the past couple of days brought forth amendments to tack on to unrelated bills in order to get rid of absolutely every single ordinance in the state. In fact, these new amendments would eliminate every single fertilizer in the state, or fertilizer ordinance in the state, even the minimum standards that are found in the state model ordinance, or the FDEP, Florida Department of Environmental Protection model ordinance. So we are, again, having to mobilize folks all over the state to try to fight back. It's hard to understand the ins and outs of the legislative process, especially towards the end of the legislative session, but it is very, very hard to tackle these kinds of last-minute amendments. They can pop up in one evening and be in a committee meeting the next morning Even worse, that can pop up an hour before a House floor or Senate floor vote. So we are having to really mobilize the heck out of our supporters around the state to try to fight back and keep these really bad amendments from making it through the legislative process.
Is there a petition online that we can invite our listeners to sign up on?
We're not that organized, I guess. We don't have a website or somewhere that you can go online, but you can certainly email me, or you can go on to the Florida Sierra Club Facebook page and get contact information there. We also have a blog, Sierra Club Florida News, that we have our alerts there. So there are a couple of different ways, but there's not a direct way to get involved immediately.
Okay.
The League of Cities here in Florida.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely have them urge them to email you. What email should they email you in support of this, or what bill should they refer to if they're emailing their congressperson?
Well, right now...
It's a moving target, huh?
The bill we know that we think is going to be amended is Senate Bill 1184. And the amendment would be from Jim Norman, Senator Jim Norman.
Okay.
My email address is very easy. It's Chris, C-R-I-S, Chris without an H, .Costello, C-O-S-T-E-L-L-O, at SierraClub.org.
C-R-I-S? .Costello, C-O-S-T-E-L-L-O, at SierraClub.org?
That's it.
Great. Chris, do you know, I know the Florida government was suing the feds so that they didn't have to enforce EPA regs. Is that still in motion? Do you think about that?
Boy, is it ever in motion. Yes. The lawsuit that the state filed against the EPA regarding their nutrient pollution limits, or what we call numeric nutrient criteria, was actually decided by a federal judge two Saturdays ago. Judge Hinkle's decision was very good for us, but not perfect. He upheld most of the federal EPA numeric nutrient criteria rule that covers freshwater bodies, lakes, streams, rivers, springs. There were a couple of technical items that he did not uphold and sent the EPA back to work to come up with a technical change regarding streams, and they need to come back in May, actually, I think it's May, to deal with that error. But it's all very complicated because since the state sued EPA over their or legally challenged the EPA's rule, the state has itself gone through a very abbreviated, unvetted process to come up with their own state rule for numeric nutrient criteria. That process went from the end of June this past summer through about December, and the state rule was sent to the legislature to be ratified. Instead of ratifying it, the legislature passed a bill that waived the necessary ratification and sent that state rule directly to the EPA for review. The really ugly part of all of this is that EPA is leaning towards giving a thumbs up to that state rule. If you ask me, they want to wash their hands of it this political season, but we are not, certainly not backing down. This past Monday, a trial began that is our legal challenge, the environmentalist legal challenge of that state rule. And so we're sure that the EPA will not, or we assume that the EPA will not come out with its decision regarding the state rule that was submitted until after this trial is done. And that could go on for weeks, done and decided completely. And you know, our position is that the EPA rule was not perfect, but it certainly was stronger and more protective than the state rule. The state rule, in a nutshell, is a joke. The state rule would allow, in fact, would require that water bodies become sick and covered with algae before anything is done. And fact is even worse than that. After a water body becomes sick with algae, covered with algae, it is then only studied under the state rule. And so we have situations, we have people living along canals, springs, rivers, and along the Gulf Coast that would have to wait a decade before the state even attempted to do something about nutrient overload in their water body. And that's just not good for public health, let alone our water, our water-based economies. So we're fighting back. The trial, I understand, is a very interesting thing, and if people are in Tallahassee and want to sit in, they are certainly encouraged to do that. It is a case of the, we feel a little bit like David and Goliath, but you know who won in that story. So.
Yeah. You know, there's just so much to be concerned about. There's so much irony here. Ostensibly, we are told all the time that the Republicans are believers in local government rather than national government or state government. And here you've got the state Republicans taking a stand against local rules. That's one level of irony, I suppose. Although I guess you could just say they're working at the behest of their masters, regardless of whether they violate rules of logic or not. And then you've got the state fighting to be able to pollute more, a state that, as you pointed out, is absolutely dependent. I mean, forget quality of life for just a second, but a state that's absolutely dependent on tourist dollars seems to be oblivious to the idea that if our waters are polluted, no one will come and visit and leave their desired dollars here. You would think that simply for greed's sake, they could see beyond their short-term wallet to see how important it is to keep Florida's water safe. Luckily, we're in this for the long pull, and we can't allow those who give our environment short shrift to have the day without any consequences and without anyone standing up. I absolutely applaud the work that you're doing, and I applaud the stamina that you have to bring to the table when you fight the same battles again and again. And the thing is, it seems so ubiquitous. You've got national Republicans who want to refight the battle for birth control of a century ago. These people are obviously very slow learners. Let me ask you another difficult question, another one that doesn't bring a quick smile to the face. Of course, that the BP trial has been postponed. And one must assume that the reason that has happened is that there's deals trying to be struck. There's people let's just say the payoff money is being dealt out. What do you hear? Do you hear anything on the state level about the EPA, about the BP case?
It comes across my computer screen, but I really, it's not my realm at this point. And so
you've got a full plate as it is, for sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Nutrient pollution, slime is my game. So there are other folks in the club that deal with the BP.
Let me ask you a question. I know one of our other guests, Drew Martin, has mentioned in the past that from the golf courses and that runoff being such a big part of it, that the other part, though, was there was an attempt to regulate septic tanks and to require people be aware and test the quality of their septic tanks because of the impact that has on underground water resources. Have you heard anything about that component of water pollution?
Yes, I know a little bit about the septic issue. 2 years ago, in 2010, some not, earth-shattering, historic, I wouldn't call it that, but some good first-step legislation was passed that would require inspection of septic tanks. That was in 2010. In 2011, the legislature tried to repeal that legislation, and they didn't repeal it, but only because they just didn't get around to it. It wasn't for lack of trying or lack of interest. this legislative session, that is all but complete. The repeal of that 2010 legislation that would require inspections at the local government level, local governments that are really slammed with these ugly, toxic, public health threat, harmful, toxic algae are really interested in being able to regulate every source of nutrient pollution that they can. And so local governments, this is another case of the state telling local governments what they can and can't do. It's very distressing for local governments. The worst part of the legislation this year is that it would preempt local governments for having their own regulation, get rid of the state regulation or the state requirement for septic tank inspection, and then also prohibit local governments from doing that. It is, again, the power of that lobby and those dollars that come from those industries or those folks that are against any regulation. It is mind-boggling. Harmful algae is bad enough, but it's mind-boggling for anyone, certainly a mother like myself, to think that anyone would be against something that would keep raw sewage out of their own backyard, out of their own drinking water. There are a lot of where there are septic tanks, there are wells for drinking water, and the two shouldn't be mixing, and they are right now. So septic is something that we're probably going to lose this year and are going to have to come back and fight next legislative session, try to bring some sense to this, just, again, no-brainer, very common sense issue.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for this update. For people who want to stay in touch with this information, can you give us that blog address?
Sure. It is www.sierraclubfloridanews.org.
Okay. And one more time?
www.sierraclubfloridanews.org.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much, Chris, and thanks for the work that you do every day.
Thanks so much, Rick. Thanks for the invite. I appreciate it.
And thanks for joining us. Chris Costello, Sierra Club's regional organizing representative. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Take care.
And now I have the pleasure of introducing Drew Martin. Drew, welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Very good, sir. Very good. And yourself?
Good.
So we just had Chris Costello on, and she was talking about that sewage issue that the legislature has put so much careful consideration to. I ask you to expound on your perspective on that and ask you to talk a little bit about what's new with you, let me do one more thing. I have to thank some of my colleagues in the progressive news community. I want to thank Amy Tidd for her support, Gwen Holden Berry. These are two wonderful, wonderful web broadcasters in the progressive community. They're doing good work every day. Also, I want to bring on and mention our good friend Susan Nylon out on the West Coast in the Sarasota area, doing good progressive broadcasts. Without the support of these people, none of this that you hear on the progressive air you would have a chance to see. So make sure you tune into all of them. You can see links to them on our PNN page. That's newmercurymedia.com/pnn.html. And now, without any further ado, sir, Mr. Martin,
yes, sir.
What's new with you, sir?
Not too much. We're busy working on many of the same issues that you talked about with Chris. Just, I think right now, everyone's absorbed with the legislature and what's happening with the legislature and how damaging that is.
You know, to me, above and beyond each of the dastardly sellout deeds that they have done, this idea of isolating themselves from testifying, isolating themselves from testimony, from depositions, it rises to a whole other level. Do you have any reaction to that sort of thing, sir?
Well, I think that right now we have an extreme right-wing political movement that is controlling the state legislature of Florida. that doesn't understand that the success of Florida as an economy and in the long run the success of the United States depends on environmental quality and that its solely interest is in business. And business is only interest appears to be in things that destroy the environment. I mean, the reality is when we looked at the national parks, a lot of businesses benefited from the establishment of national parks. That's why originally many businesses were on board. And we used to have many wealthy people that were pro-environment. We go back to Theodore Roosevelt in the time of the Boone and Crockett Club. It was a fairly a wealthy person's club, but they were interested in the environment. They saw the importance of protecting the environment, and they were a progressive movement. We just don't see that movement controlling many of the parts of the country now. It's an anti-government movement, anti-environment movement, very harmful to the future of this country and to the future of the earth.
Well, I think, you know, one positive thread that I can tease out of this whole dilemma is the level of overreach has gotten so great that they've really alerted so many more people than would have otherwise noticed if they'd just been half as greedy as they were. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the problem is that you have a very dangerous configuration going on right now, interests that are extremely anti-environment. Originally, we had many of the people in the western United States, the mining, ranching, and the large agribusiness, along with logging, that were very anti-environmental because the whole purpose of protecting the environment was to leave something for future generations. And I go back to Theodore Roosevelt because he was such a pivotal person in the environmental history of the United States. Because Theodore Roosevelt realized when he was elected that if we permitted people to continue to use up our resources in the fashion they were using them, that there would be nothing left, that there would literally be no resources left in the United States. And we would not be the great country we are today if those resources had all been basically just strip mined as they intended them. Those people wanted to do it. We would have no forests. We would have had no watersheds. We would have had no open lands. Everything would have just been a barren wasteland. So we now see the same sort of mentality in things like fracking with natural gas. And what we're seeing up in Canada with tar sands, this same mentality of basically leaving nothing, just stripping the earth bare of all its resources so that a few people can make money and the rest of us are going to be left behind. I mean, the rest of us aren't doing that well financially, yet these people who are doing this sort of destruction of the earth are becoming very wealthy and leaving the rest of us with an impoverished earth.
You know, I heard a news story today right on the heels of that little tiny BP settlement that the Corps of Engineers is settling a case for $20 billion, whereas it looks like BP may get off with this $7 billion and clearly less than the $20 billion that the Obama administration allegedly stated they needed to put aside. And here, ultimately, this is the taxpayers paying this bill. And here you've got a polluter whose damage is still ongoing, whose damage is going to be with us for decades. And, you know, they're getting off scot-free. I think that the one hope we have is that more and more people are going to get made aware of the fact that we have to oppose this kind of casual mistreatment of the earth.
Well, you're absolutely right. And you have to remember, BP did not only destroy and kill probably countless millions of animals, but BP killed 11 individuals. No one was ever held accountable. And if you go back and you read what was going on and you read the transcripts of what was going on at that time, they warned those people. People said, this is going to blow up. This is going to be a disaster. And BP said, we don't care. We don't want to spend the money. Keep going. And so 11 people died. That's manslaughter. And EPA is being denied the ability to enforce the laws. And if those laws were enforced properly, this would be felony. And we'd be talking about felony manslaughter convictions. And when I was in Washington, D.C., which I went with a group of people, business interests and citizens up to Washington, D.C., right after the oil spill, I mentioned this to several U.S. senators. Why is BP not being held for criminal liability? And this is the whole weakness that we have right now in environmental law, because a lot of things that go on in the environment are killing people. And this is just one example. People died because of what BP did. We see this over and over again. We see corporations doing things, and the whole issue with fracking and what's happening to people's drinking water. People are getting cancer. They're ending up, you know, dying. But yet the environmental laws are so weak that the corporations just pay some small fine and keep going.
Well, it seems that this corporate personhood only works when they want it to, and doesn't come into play when it has to deal with responsibility.
Well, corporations certainly don't pay the same level of taxes as an individual, but this is this whole conservative mentality, which I don't believe is truly conservative, because I think people, if you were truly a conservative, you would want to conserve the resources as the progressive Republicans wanted to at the turn of the last century under Theodore Roosevelt. But today we have a group of people that are truly not conservatives, in the sense that they don't want to leave anything for the next generation. They're overfishing the oceans to the point where we're not going to have any kind of fish. They're totally disregarding good fisheries management. When we look at what's going on with species like bluefin tuna, where the longline fishing, trawling, where they take and destroy the ocean bottoms. This is all going on right now, and yet we're not getting any kind of good environmental legislation to stop this. We fight constant battles over and over again. We win a battle, and then the other side turns around and comes back again right away and tries to start over doing what they're doing.
I just one of the stories that I'm going to keep following as long as I can is the ongoing continued radioactive pollution from Fukushima. And there's a story in the a nuclear industry magazine that's saying that a local Japanese farmer who's over 100 miles from Fukushima went to have his eggs tested, and there were 60 becquerels of cesium in them. And he asked the scientist, who happened to have been, there was some European scientists there, and he said, well, what do they regard as toxic over in Chernobyl? And he said six becquerels. So they're allowing higher pollution there. They've got an ongoing ad campaign where they've hired some college students to go around and eat food from the area to show that everything's okay, as if being able to eat it without falling over meant that it was safe.
Well, those students will probably end up with stomach cancer going in the future. And remember that that very, very toxic radiation is also coming over the United States. And so, you know, and the problem with radiation is no amount is really beneficial. I mean, we get some radiation from the Earth naturally, but nuclear power has proven to be an absolute failed system. The way it operates now is extremely risky, and it's tremendously expensive. Yet we can't seem to get the Earth to transition to solar power, which is much more efficient, because it is so cheap for big corporations to destroy the Earth that they pay no penalty. And just even the U.S. legislation now that we have, we see that part of the legislation was to negate all responsibility for nuclear power plants, and that they would never have any risk, that if there was a nuclear damage, that it would be paid for by the taxpayer. The same is true in Florida with building nuclear plants. The risk is completely on the taxpayer. To pay now as a FPL ratepayer or a progressive, you pay fees before the plant's built. You pay to build the plant, and if they decide not to build it, you pay for that. Yet here's a governor and a legislature that claims that they care about cutting taxes, but they don't care about cutting people's utility bills. So it's just a total hypocrisy. that's going on right now.
Yep. You know, the one of the other stories I just saw was that they're finding radioactive pollution as far away as Lithuania at dangerous levels, and they're saying it's present at different altitudes across the United States and Canada as well. So people who think that this was something confined to the ground or even the air of Japan are sadly mistaken.
Well, you look at the fact that they came very close to evacuating Tokyo during the nuclear meltdown, which was a meltdown. And now we have the very same thing with FPL at Turkey Point, very close to Miami. And you think about it, once you get radiation exposure to a certain level, it's too dangerous for humans to live there. We're looking at the possibility of making a city like Miami uninhabitable. I mean, this is the problem with nuclear power. Nuclear power industry says, well, it's extremely safe because we don't have a problem every day. But the problem with nuclear power, when you do have a problem, it could last for 300 or 400 years. It's not the same as a plane. A plane crashes, the people on the plane die. That's a very unfortunate thing. But the plane doesn't crash over and over again for 400 years. It crashes once, and that's the end of it. The problem with the nuclear power plant, it melts down. That's only the beginning. Those problems will exist as long as the radiation's in the ground.
Let me ask you this. How are things going with the water supply of Palm Beach?
Well, we get some rain from day to day. We did get rain today, but the problem basically is overconsumption. There's always been enough water in Florida, but the problem is that we don't conserve it. And the basic lack of conservation is in our landscaping, which uses 50% to 60% of our urban water supply. Agriculture also uses a lot of water, but agriculture is a mixed bag because we definitely we eat the food and we need to have agriculture. It could be more efficient. We oftentimes grow crops that we don't absolutely need, or we grow more than we need. But the problem with most of the urban water supply is simply that we are over-consuming for lawns. And turf grass is probably the biggest problem in Florida. Now, you had Chris Costello on there, and she was talking about fertilizer issues. Fertilizer issues are 90% related in urban areas to turf. The big fight is with Scotts, the big turf chemical company. And the reality is people come up north, they like the look of grass, but you can have natural ground covers that don't require any chemicals. We need to move to that. We need to get away from turf. We need to get away from sod. And we need to get away from irrigation systems that pour a lot of water out on those sort of landscapes. We need to go to natural native landscapes that are water efficient. And that would help tremendously with the amount of water that we use here in places like Palm Beach County. It also is a problem because of the storm runoff, and because runoff of chemicals gets into our water areas like in Palm Beach County, Lake Worth Lagoon, our oceans, our reefs. So we just need to use less water outside, and then we need to move to more efficient use of water inside our buildings with more efficient toilets, more efficient showers. But that can all be done with building codes, and it's relatively simple. And it increases the number of jobs, because when you refit a building, you are hiring people to do it.
You know, I'm wondering, you've got the twin pressures of an economy still struggling, and you've got governmental cutbacks, which are reducing mass transit availability. So therefore, the pressure's back on people driving cars, which adds more pollution, which again is impacted because of the gas prices. It's hard to imagine any kind of short-term turnaround in the amount of pollution that we're putting via these gas engines in the environment. Do you see anything on the front, the municipal or county front, where are they moving to any of the less polluting fuels?
Well, there have been some movements to biofuels, but biofuels, the problem we have in the United States is we use biofuels from food sources when we really need to do is we need to move to biofuels from things like yard waste rather than raising food bills to create biofuels. biofuels run. I mean, with diesel engines, definitely biofuels run as non-polluters. But if you create as much pollution to grow a biofuel as it reduces when you burn it in an engine, you don't save yourself any
pollution. Yeah, there's no savings.
So you basically need to find ways to make biofuels out of things where you can create those biofuels in a non-polluting way, which means rather than using food crops like corn and soybeans and palm oil to build your biofuels, you need to move to algae or some byproduct from things like food waste or animal waste where you can build something and you're not creating a new pollutant while you make it. The other thing is we need to change how we live, and it's very difficult because we as Americans, and we set the standard for the rest of the world, really, you know, we live a very energy wasteful life. And you know, we've come to believe that's our right. And the interesting thing is whenever gas prices go up, then the gas prices come back down because people conserve. Even though people don't like to think, oh, I can never conserve, the reality is the price goes up, and you'll see it again. If the price of gas keeps going up, people will start to conserve. They'll try to buy cars that are more fuel efficient. They'll drive less. But we need to get past the point where we only do that when we're influenced by price, when we begin to think about how we can use less energy. One thing we do in Florida is people run air conditioning constantly. And we need to get past that. There are times of the year when people need air conditioning. Most people do. I've managed to go without it, but I don't expect most people are able to do that. But the reality is there are many days in Florida when you can open your windows, get some fresh air in your house, and turn your air conditioning off. The other thing is to dress appropriately. People can wear light clothing in the summer and heavy clothing in the winter so that their houses aren't too hot in the winter or too cold in the summer. And we see that in places like Japan where they've encouraged that. The other thing we can do is turn off electric lights, turn off computers, turn off TVs. And then we can put pressure on manufacturers to manufacture products that are energy efficient. In Europe, cable boxes turn off when you turn off your TV. In the United States, cable boxes run 24 hours using as much power as a refrigerator. So there's a lot of things we can do, and it doesn't take away people's ability to enjoy their lives. And at the same time, it can actually create jobs because we're remanufacturing and living more intelligently. The other thing is to stop using so much plastic. And the biggest thing we do right now is we waste so much of our energy sources getting everything in a plastic bag, a plastic cup, a plastic straw, a plastic spoon, a styrofoam paper, a styrofoam plate, a styrofoam cup. I mean, all this is just a huge waste. And if you went back 100 years, none of that would have existed. And and plastic is completely non-biodegradable. It doesn't go away. And we have this huge mess of waste that then has to be hauled away every day because we don't do anything practical or common sense. We do everything in the most impractical, it's really basically a very poor way of living our lives. It's not what would be conservative. And if you go back to World War II and you look how intelligently and efficiently people lived, then we know people can live that way. People drove only with more than one person in the car. People recycled. Everything in World War II was recycled. People turned their lights off at night. People did all kinds of things that today, if you ask people to do, the very people on the right would be screaming the loudest that their rights were being taken away. But all this was done. If people live intelligently, we can reduce our energy use by at least 50%.
Well, Drew, as always, I can't thank you enough for the information that you bring to us. If you were to say what's one thing that people should be paying attention to in the next few weeks as the legislature wraps up its devastating attack on Floridians, what would you say is one thing we should pay attention to?
Well, you really want to look at this one bill that Ellen Bogdanoff is putting on there, which is going to eliminate the supermajority, and particularly in Miami-Dade, where to protect the Everglades, we had a UDB, Urban Development Boundary, and it requires a supermajority vote to move that boundary. And that's really helped us in the environmental movement protect Everglades National Park and the Everglades ecosystem. She is going to, tomorrow at 10 a.m., there's going to be a vote, and she is going to attempt to pass a vote that takes away the ability of the cities and counties to have supermajority votes and to go to a simple majority. This will cause a great deal of environmental harm. So
I think
I'm
that's HB 4003 with her amendment 832626.
I'm going to take your word for it because I don't have it memorized.
Yeah, I picked up I got an email about it earlier today.
So that's something that we definitely want to push back on, and we'd also definitely want to push back on any amendment and like that that reduces our ability to protect the environment. We're also looking at the loss of inspections on septic tanks, and that's going to be problematic for the springs in the northern part of the state.
Well, again, thank you so much, Drew. Keep up the good work, buddy. Keep the faith. We're with you all the way. Thanks again
for
showing
up. Thanks for your radio show. We appreciate it.
Okay, Drew. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was always, as always, interesting material, important, useful information for those of us who are concerned about this world that we live in. I have a few more announcements I want to make before we finish off the night. I also want to mention that we'll be seeing you all at the Susan B. Anthony Luncheon on March 18th. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, make sure you get in touch with Palm Beach County now. Make sure you're there because, as always, women's rights are human rights. And there's no one that got to this place without the love of a good woman. And we have to make sure that the human rights of every American are supported. And there's no better way than to remember the struggle that Susan B. Anthony and her sisters brought to bear to make sure that women had the right to vote. And before the right wing tries to take away women's right to vote, since they're marching backwards in history, let's make sure we support Palm Beach County Now and the Susan B. Anthony Luncheon, March 18th. I also want to mention another good progressive radio show, Wild Wild Left, Diane G's project. Tune in. She's always got great guests. So, again, my list of incredible progressive broadcasters. Let me bring once again to your attention Gwen Holden Berry and her Here Be Monsters show, the Amy Tidd show on Saturdays. Gwen is almost daily now. It's a great show on Sundays from 6 to 7, just leading into our show. Also, Anita Stewart's got a wonderful show. Susan Nylon on the West Coast doing some great progressive broadcasting. And also Diane G with her Wild Wild Left. Tune in, support these people. Make sure your friends know about it. It's a great place to get the news on what's going on in the progressive community. I'm your host, Richard Spezak, News Director of Progressive News Network. On behalf of myself and my co-producer, Mickey Royce, I want to thank you so much for joining us. You're the reason we do this. Because despite the battles we have in front of us, the challenges we have, without the good work of progressives every day, we could not make our way into the future. So keep up the good work, my friends. Richard Spezak, Progressive News Network. You take care, and we'll see you next week. Don't forget, our shows are archived, so if you miss one or you want to refer one to a friend, you can always point your clicker to our website, and you can listen to shows from the past and, of course, the show live. Thanks again. Richard Spezak, News Director, signing off.